once more under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
We did it. We said our names.
We did.
Let's go home.
All right.
Silence.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. The Personal Wealth Coach is not only the name of this radio program, it's also the name, not coincidentally, of an SEC-registered investment advisor based in Salado, Texas, that does wealth management and investment management and so on for higher net worth people.
Just and, because the SEC is who we register through does not mean that they endorse us in any way.
Yeah.
I say that.
That's certainly true.
To say.
But that's who we're registered with.
Yes.
And let's see, what else? The stuff that we talk about on here is considered to be, should be considered to be educational and not investment advice, because investment advice is given to each individual, and people have different situations, so they should have different advice.
And we may not know everyone that's listening. I'm not talking about you.
What makes you think?
Or you.
What do you make?
But
what,
you.
What
makes you, you. I may not know.
Yeah, but
you.
What makes you think anyone is listening?
What did you say?
I mean, you're listening.
I wasn't listening. What
yeah,
were you saying?
And I can give investment advice to you. I just can't do it while this foam ball's in front of me.
Right. Then we have privacy issues.
Yes. And then there's piracy issues. And anyway.
Private piracy issues.
That's certainly true. And we have obtained the information we use for this educational program from sources we believe to be reliable. And we've researched and are generally considered to be reliable, which means we're not getting them off Joe Snicko's website or something like
yeah.
that.
They're MySpace.
Yeah, something like that. We get we use things like the Wall Street Journal, the Financial Times,
Washington Post, New York
Barron's,
Times, Bloomberg, and, Moody's,
and we try to stay off of the opinion pages and stick with the facts. And we go back to this.
That doesn't mean that there's
not. We do
not
go back
some...
to this questionable source because the Commerce Department, the Labor Department,
right.
and places like that.
Bureau of Economic Analysis. Yeah.
By the way,
places like that.
Good idea when you hear something astonishing or you read something astonishing and it's some terrible thing that's going on. Go back to the source itself.
It may still be a horrible thing and you'll say, that was a good story. But
pretty rarely.
Pretty rarely. Big shocks like that are generally not.
The only big shocks are coming directly from authoritative sources recently.
Yes.
You know.
So what's happened in the market this week?
Well,
I'm seeing a lot of red.
Well, there could be, but the line I follow on this thing is always red. So the S&P 500 closed at 2691.25. And I don't know if any of you who follow closely what we publish in our newsletter, but we say, you know, kind of mark when we cross these 100 positions, and 2500 was a big one when the S&P 500 crossed it last year. And I said that just kind of use that as a benchmark. It dropped below 2700 at the end of this week. Now it's bobbed up and down below around 2700. And that's kind of my marker to tell whether it's up and down. For the week, the S&P 500 was down 2.04%. The Dow was down 3.05%. Year to date, the S&P 500 is up 0.66%, and the Dow is down 0.73%, which basically means overall the market is pretty much where it started the year. The 12-month return of the S&P 500, which I look at fairly seriously every week, is 12.93%, just under 13%, and that's a crucial number. It indicates something, and it remember that 13% number, because we're going to come back to it in just a second. If you just looked at the end of last week, the end of this week, the 10-year Treasury note had about the same yield in the 2.8 something range. A very, very small movement from the end of last week to the end of this week until you looked at what happened in between. The higher the interest rate goes on the 10-year Treasury note, the more the market, the bond market for that particular security, which is sort of the benchmark for the rest of the bond industry, the higher the number, the higher the yield, the more they expect to see high interest rates, possibly high inflation, but definitely a higher economic growth in the future. in the middle of the week, it got up to right just short of – it got up in the 2.9s, just short of 3%. 3% is kind of a mark for the 10-year note. When it crosses 3%, that'll be significant if it crosses and stays it. And then it dropped back to where it was at the beginning of the week. And the thing that – it dropped back very simply on the statement by the president that we're going to impose tariffs. In essence, the – 10-year Treasury note said, whoops, we're not going to get as much growth in the future, in the next year or so, as we thought we were going to get. We're going to get less growth. And so let's back up to the beginning of the year. Let me take this step further.
Okay.
The price-to-earnings ratio – let's forget the price-to-earnings ratio just a moment. Let's talk about the fact that from 1 year ago – the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index, which is a good measure of the whole stock market, is up 13%. Earnings in corporations that constitute the S&P 500 are up 15%. So a week ago, the S&P 500 was up 16%. Earnings were up 15%. We only see these earnings report once a quarter. And that indicated that the stock market said, hey, this coming year is probably going to be better than last year. You know, basically the earnings went up this much. We went up a little more because we're anticipating earnings to improve. The fact that it dropped back to 13% rise without a huge collapse, in other words, it's kind of stabilized at a 13% above last year, says earnings were up 15% in the last 12 months. We don't expect them. We now have changed our mind collectively, people in the market. And we say something has happened that is going to hurt the earnings of American corporations across the board. And that drop occurred right after there was an announcement by the President of the United States. So we have to – it's easy. And the traders, of course, are saying that's exactly why it happened.
But. Right. I mean, you can look at the timing of when tariff was announced. And let me – we're going to give some background into this. Why would the market react like this to an announcement about tariffs? First, it was a shock. Not that we never thought that the president would announce tariffs, but the White House over the past week has said the president's going to announce tariffs. No, he's not. Yes, he is. No, he's not. For sure, no, he won't. And then he did. And the way he did it was a little bit odd in that he announced it after the meeting, which was supposed to be a listening session with the steel and aluminum executives. So he got some questions after the meeting. He says, so this is the end of the meeting. This is part of the shock. He hasn't announced anything. Gets asked an innocuous question and says, we're going to input tariffs of 25% on steel, 10% on aluminum across the board for every nation in the world. The reason why it was such a shock is the administration's not even prepared paperwork for it yet. There was nobody in the administration knew that the announcement was coming. So if you think that the administration didn't know about it, the market certainly didn't and had been told the opposite, in fact, had been told by the administration, don't expect this, it's not going to happen. Well, then it happened. And what does that mean? I'm sure this has been covered. Anybody that's listening to this also is watching or listening to other financial news or have listened to us in the past. When you the tweet that trade wars are easy to win.
They're good.
And good.
They're a good thing and they're easy to win.
That's just a statement that, you know, a lot of the tweets of the president, I can support what he's saying publicly in a lot of cases, but then the tweet comes out and I'm going, what is that? Well, this is in line with what he said publicly. There's no point in history that there's been a good trade war or an easy to win one. This is by definition, his example is if we have $100 billion trade deficit with someone, we just stop trading with it, bingo, we won. What that means is that whatever it was that we were buying, that we wanted so much that the people of the United States bought $100 billion more of than we sold back the other way, prices just went up, or we don't get to buy it. The fall of the Soviet Union is attributed almost entirely to the opening of borders for information and trade. When they realized that they could get better products elsewhere, it collapsed the government of a very controlling state to say, hey, we're not in competition. To throw a tariff on everyone increases the expense at the short run on much of what we buy today, and that's not the end of it. The other countries now get their shot. We have given a, in essence, unfair tariff. We didn't point at somebody and say, you're dumping steel. And there's some evidence that the Chinese have dumped steel, and there's evidence that the Chinese have dumped aluminum, but we only import about 2% of our steel from China. And of the steel that we're using, it's only about 2%. So to slam the entire world based on China doesn't make sense.
Well, you couldn't narrow it down. Under the law,
the law that he used.
The law that he used, it is to protect the strategic ability of the United States to continue to make weapons to defend itself, which, right, by the way, isn't going to hold water because we reduce 82% of the steel,
right?
Or 84%.
We import 27, so that makes it at 73.
We also export some, oddly,
right?
And there's another oddity to this, listeners, if there are any, that is quite significant. After initially the reaction from the steel and aluminum manufacturers was cool, and they said this is great, and then they realized the implications of imposing steel tariffs and aluminum tariffs on
everybody. Unilaterally. It's across the board. Right.
Our largest supplier, technically, is Canada, 16%.
Right. 16% of the steel that we import, not 16% of our steel.
Right.
But of the 27% that we import, 16% of that
comes from Canada.
Most
of that doesn't come. It's not like Canadians are making aluminum or steel and sending it to the United States. Most of the metals that are imported from Canada have their initial – they go back and forth across the border sometimes several times in the process of refining them and creating what they're ultimately going to be as sheet aluminum or bars of aluminum or whatever, or steel. They go back and forth across the border several times because the supply chain – in the United States for these same companies that he was talking to, in most cases involve part of that supply chain being in Canada. So if you throw a 25% tariff
and then the Canadians respond, which they will,
which they've already announced that they're putting tariffs together to respond to our tariffs, Canada is, they've already announced that if we impose the tariffs, they will impose counter tariffs. And there's a lot of things. Canada and Mexico are among our top four import sources for steel, for example. And they are also our number one and number two customers for exports. So, and China has already shown how this works. China has already announced that if this goes into effect, they're going to buy fewer airplanes from Boeing and more from Airbus. They've already announced that, by the way, they've started an investigation into the dumping of sorghum,
right,
which we call Milo, which is a major agricultural export in the United States. We're the biggest agricultural exporter in the world.
And we subsidize all of that. The government pays farmers to do this. So it is, in effect, unfair trade practices.
Yeah,
and everybody's ignoring it until we do this.
And Just as a little side note here, two or three sources that I read late yesterday and early this morning stated that the end result, if the president goes through with a blanket tariff, would be a loss of jobs and capacity in the steel and aluminum industry in the United States.
Right.
And there's only 140,000 people in the United States that work in steel, for example.
There are a lot more than that.
There are
orders of magnitude more than that working in industries that will be affected by the tariff.
There are many hundreds of thousands of people. For instance, let me give you an example. Let's just say steel and aluminum go up, like he said, and let's just talk about steel going up 25% across the board. If you've noticed your automobile recently or your pickup truck, you'll notice that most of it's made of steel.
Oh, I have noticed that, as a matter of fact.
And the fact is that the price of steel going up 25% will cause a significant increase in the cost of buying the next pickup truck that you buy. And so people will tend to buy fewer. Now, this is you know what's really weird? Let me throw this in here, and I'll transfer it back to you. What's really weird is that tariff would not apply to a Toyota pickup. Toyota mostly makes them in the United States, but let's just say Toyota imported a pickup truck into the United States, and it is mostly steel.
And they buy their steel overseas, so they're not tariffed on that.
They buy their steel mostly from China, and so that makes the foreign-made automobiles and trucks
less expensive
than American-made, and the quick back of the envelope stuff that the economists have done so far said this could be devastating to the American economy. Without any counter tariffs, even though the European Union and Canada have already announced they'll impose them.
Let's go through the logic of it. Once the logic's laid out, it makes sense. Okay, we're importing 27% of the steel we're using.
Right.
Okay. That means that we are not producing enough steel to meet our own demand.
Right.
Makes sense so far. Okay.
There are two steel plants in the United States that are shut down.
Okay. The reason why they're shut down. Remember, U.S. Steel was the monopoly of monopolies. It owned basically the steel manufacturing capability of the entire planet. This was in the early 20th century. It's funded and itself based on the Industrial Revolution. It was broken up. A lot of money was spent on very large capacity steel manufacturing facilities, foundries that were just absolutely huge. We've all seen it. We've all seen videos of it. And anytime, I'm sure it's been on the news constantly over this tariff issue. It's not the cheapest way to make steel anymore, but we have a lot of sunk money into that. Where the companies in the United States see these big manufacturing facilities, the people that are competing with them have much cheaper facilities. But what do? Do you just dump the existing very expensive facility? No. They keep building in that big expensive facility, but they can't do it at the same price. This is when we talk about the need for recessions, the need for changing in technology, we talk about getting rid of the deadwood. Well, if you have a manufacturing facility that was set up to make the Apple IIe computer and you're trying to use those same facilities to make the Apple, the MacBook Air, you're going to have some problems. You're not going to be able to do it well. You have to retool. You have to completely scrap it and go forward. Tariffs keep companies from scrapping old technology and going with new technology. And that's a painful process. The scrapping of old technology costs money. But if you don't, then we're going to get our lunches eaten by the rest of the world. So, our capacity, our manufacturing and use capacity, we didn't import a lot of extra steel in 2009. You can go back and look at the numbers on this to see what was. We were right at about our manufacturing level, but that was in the middle of the Great Recession. The steel companies didn't recover as quickly coming out of that because cheaper steel was out there. The Chinese are making it. The Canadians are making it. And the Canadians don't have a huge demand for their steel right now, but we do. So they've been providing it. They've got new technology that's being used to do it. We slap tariffs down. And what we do doesn't cause people, the American prices to drop. No, it will cause American prices to go up because we still have missing 27% of our steel. So if this is supply and demand. If you've got a supply that's not enough by 27%, then the price has to go up on domestic steel, not because they're making it better or they've got better technology for doing it. No, it's because we're slapping tariffs on everybody else. So it's more expensive there. Expect the prices to rise by roughly 24.5%.
Speaking of MacBook Air,
mm-hmm.
We have this issue of, okay, where is a computer manufactured? And I looked this up. The circuit boards are manufactured overseas,
right,
with the MacBook, but the aluminum case is manufactured in the United States.
Right.
What a tariff on imported aluminum would very likely do in this particular case is said, okay, it's, you can import an aluminum computer case in the United States without a tariff, but if you have the computer case manufactured in the United States, prices will be higher because we've raised the prices on aluminum.
Right. So it very likely could cause either the importing of the aluminum case, which that's probably the biggest result,
right,
because you can get it cheaper now. I mean, if you got a 25% differential on the cost of a part by getting it overseas,
well, it's 10% on aluminum.
Or 10% on aluminum. You're going to use it because you don't spend 10% extra on a part just because. Because when it comes down to the customer level, the customer sees a rise in price. They don't say, oh,
right,
this is because you're buying American. They say, whoa, there's a cheaper one over there.
And if you look at, you look at the situation, to give you an example about, these are big numbers with the billions of dollars people spend, the companies spend on things like computer cases. But think about it just a moment. If you go to the store, any store, or you went to a hardware store, for example, and there are two, and you want a wrench, and there are two identical wrenches side by side.
Made out of the same material.
Made out of the same material.
Same warranty.
Right. And
different
one
companies.
One of them is $10 and one of them is $9.
Which one do you buy?
You're probably going to buy the $9 wrench. And the reason, so that 10% differential has a tremendous knock-on effect as we move forward. And
that affects sales at every store that sells anything with any of these metals in it.
Boeing's price dropped, the stock price dropped immediately. And here's the principal reason.
The steel manufacturers and aluminum manufacturers of the United States had their stock prices drop drastically yesterday.
This is an interesting point. There's this global war going on right now, trade war in effect.
It's begun.
There's a trade war going on between Airbus and Boeing.
Right.
To be the dominant exporter of airlines. And a big piece of our exports in the United States and a lot of jobs in the United States are generated by Boeing and its subcontractors. Raise the price of the aluminum in the Boeing aircraft
and it's
by
no
10%.
Longer, yeah. It's not competitive
and
anymore.
And then don't raise the price of Airbus's raw materials. And bingo, Boeing no longer is competitive in the world market. Now,
planning on starting a plant here. And they've canceled the plans at this point.
There's several companies have announced that if the tariffs go through, they're going to cancel. But this is the point I want to make here. It was for defense purposes that the tariffs supposedly are being imposed.
Right.
If Boeing can't sell its airliners because of a tariff on aluminum that it has to import to make its airliners, it's got a couple of options. It can either just surrender and say, we lose the war and start shrinking, or it can move its facilities overseas. If it moves its facilities overseas, well, then it's no longer eligible for government for our defense products to be made.
Right.
If it loses its ability to make the larger aircraft, now this is crucial. The White House just contracted to build new Air Force Ones. There's multiple of them.
Right.
And Boeing is the one who won the contract. But Boeing is going to have to come back in now and raise the price on that contract based on the
supply
on
costs
the tariff.
Just went up.
And if they lose out in the global competition, and it looks very much like they will immediately start losing orders, it will dramatically raise the cost and put in question our ability to make the high-tech aluminum aircraft. Because if you take a look at many of the larger transport aircraft that the Air Force is buying right now, you'll discover that, for instance, Boeing makes them, but they look an awful lot like a civilian airliner because they can come in and say, we can do this inexpensively, we can do this effectively, because we're just going to modify an airliner body that we have to fit your transport requirement. And if you raise the cost of aluminum 10%, which is exactly what would happen, you're going to see Boeing, our number one aircraft defense supplier, Lockheed, our number two aircraft defense supplier, begin to dry up because they're not going to be competitive in the civilian world anymore. The implications of this, and I'd like to hear somebody
let me
defend this tariff.
I'm going to throw this in here too, because it's important. Carl Icahn, do you know who this name is? I'm sure it's hit your news feed. He's money manager, big hedge fund.
Yeah,
guy.
I've got this little icon on my computer.
Yeah, Carl
Icahn. Carl.
Yeah. He was an advisor to the Trump campaign. He was an advisor to Trump. After the election, he worked with Trump a bit. They didn't meet a whole lot. He resigned because he was too busy. Still big supporter of Trump. After the announcement of the tariff, he dumped all of his stock holdings in the steel industry.
He actually dumped them before the announcement.
Right. Well, that's the point.
He apparently got some insider information that the announcement was coming.
So this statement of the advisor to the president, who is pretty good at what he does, he's not necessarily the most ethical person in the world, but that kind of defines in many cases a good trader, dumps the American steel industry on news of a tariff because he understands economics. Tariffs, trade wars, let me make this as clear as possible. There is no winner in a trade war. At least in like a military war, you can clearly say this is the winner, this is the loser, unless you just have this constant ongoing thing that nobody wins or loses. In a trade war, there's no way to say who the winner is. It means whatever happens in a trade war, the consumer loses. And we are a consumer economy. I mean, we promote that and have promoted that on the world stage for many years. Peace comes through trade. Peace comes through being dependent on each other for each other's goods. If we're selling something that they want and they're selling something that we want, this is a good relationship. If you get in the way of that, this is
next step. Yeah, he dumped $31.1 million of stock. And anything that had to do with steel.
And if the SEC doesn't investigate that, then they are asleep at the wheel.
Yeah.
As clearly as I can say this, there was a reason why Al-Qaeda attacked the World Trade Center. Because it was the symbol of free trade for the globe. It is the symbol of the thing that was most repugnant to the people that hate us. The ability for us to sell and buy openly whatever we want, wherever we want, in a way that benefits all people is why they attacked the World Trade Center twice. We're doing their job for them. We are disassembling a structure that we put in place that was built very carefully since the end of World War II. The system of we should compete on an even playing field. We should compete based on the quality of our products. And if our products are more expensive and lower quality, you should buy somebody else's. But we're confident that our products are going to be the best in the world. And well, we're stepping back from that. And that's not good for our economy at all. It means that we will not be the center of trade. And if you look back throughout history, any country that begins imposing tariffs stops being the center of trade. And that seems like common sense to me, but it's not common sense to a lot of people. It's not common. If you charge people more to do business with you, guess what? They're going to do less business with you. And if there are other customers available, they get the benefit of the deals that you were getting before, and they may even get it cheaper. And that's the thing. We've got a big demand for steel. Canada's providing the steel. If we're buying that steel and then suddenly it gets too expensive, Canada doesn't say, okay, we're just going to have to drop our price and keep selling it to you. If they're going to drop their price, they sell it to the whole world at that dropped price. That means our steel prices go up while the rest of the world's steel prices go down.
Yeah, literally.
We get hurt the most out of this deal, not the least. Trade wars, particularly if you declare them on the whole world, if you declare war on the world, this is true no matter if you're the Roman Empire, Germany, or the Soviet Union, you lose. I don't care how good a country we have the best country out there, in my opinion, but we've just declared a trade war on everybody, allies included. England, Canada, doesn't matter.
To continue this rant, there's an irony. why would the stock market drop? I mean, stock market is neutral on its political opinions. It simply says, yeah. What is this?
What's the value?
What's the economic effect here? We got a call coming in on 773-1400. You're on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Yes, sir. How much does it cost to make steel? And what's the process to make it? And when they do make it, do they customize it to be used to build certain items? I'll take my answer off there. Thank
okay.
you, sir.
All right.
Oh, the cost is all over the place. It all yeah. depends on, you know, when you say
location,
it all depends
important.
On what you mean. Pig iron per pound is relatively inexpensive to produce, but as soon as you go from pig iron, which is the stuff that comes out of the initial oven, if you will.
There are many, many, many different alloys.
They all the way up, there's
tungsten.
You can put titanium mixed with steel.
You can put carbide. You can. I mean, there are so many things you can do with the metal that you get prices that range from very, very cheap to very, very expensive, and you get every range in the middle of customization as well. And we've got another caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Caller?
Okay. I could hear them on the radio in the background, but nobody was there. Okay. So the concept here in this rant, this Donald Trump is listening to two advisors, and they're fighting each other. His advisor on trade, and what is his name? It starts with a P. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I know who you're talking about, but I don't know his name.
I've got it in one of these articles open here somewhere. Anyway, and Cohen, there's two Democrats.
Cohen.
There's two Democrats in there, admitted Democrat economists, that are his primary economic advisors. Cohen is pretty apolitical. His trade advisor is not. He's run for office for congressional seats as Democrat multiple times. He's been since his early days a proponent of slapping tariffs on everything, and he hasn't had the ear of almost anyone for a long time. He now has the ear of the president. And this, I mean, there's a political and chaotic organizational problem in the administration. This is pretty apparent any way you look at it.
Peter Navarro, is that who you're talking about?
No, Navarro's one of them. And it may be Peter Navarro that we're talking about here. Anyway, they're big proponents of not free trade. Cohen is a proponent of free trade. And Cohen is looking at history where Navarro and I can't think of the other guy's name, and we'll come up with it at some point, are both talking about it's different this time. If you slap tariffs on people, it will work out well. But there's not been a point in history where you can find it working. It doesn't work. To think that we can do it this time and it will be okay, that's a problem. It's a major problem. This is the final thing. I think this wraps it up really well. What happens to the money in the tariff? There's a 25% tariff on steel. Where does that money go? There's a 25% charge. Well, it goes to the U.S. government. Does it then go to the U.S. steel manufacturers? No. It goes into the coffers of the U.S. government to spend as they see fit. So we get a larger government.
I think it's Navarro you're talking about.
It could be Navarro. Is he the head of the, new position?
National Trade Council.
That's the one, Peter Navarro.
Sounds like it's a council, but there's only one person, and
right.
That's him.
Yeah. So the concept here is that the government gets this money to spend as they see fit. So who pays for it? Well, the consumer. This is a tax increase. There's no other way you can look at it. We've just lowered taxes. And now we're raising them.
Well, that's something I wanted to point out. Several economists have come out with an interesting. You got a call?
Yeah, got a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I have a question for you guys. You know, Alcoa was a big aluminum producer here in the United States.
Right.
Are they no longer do they have anything that they're making aluminum again anywhere in the United States?
they're still a huge aluminum producer in the United States.
But you're telling me that they can't produce what we need by themselves.
No, what we're saying is that they're not producing what they need by themselves. What we need by ourselves is not being produced there. They are, for whatever reason, mostly because they have a lot of sunk cost and existing manufacturing capabilities rather than the newer technology. It costs money to retool, and they haven't spent the money to retool. So there's other aluminum available cheaper. A good example of that is...
Where does it come from?
Jamaica, Mexico, Venezuela does a little bit, though not right now. Brazil... Canada does some. The much of our aluminum refining and manufacturing has died off because we had these really, really, really massive plants, and it's a very electricity-intensive process.
Alcoa, as an example, has its major expansion currently underway in Iceland, not in the United States. And the reason is it takes a lot of electricity to make aluminum. I mean, a lot. And in Iceland, they have an abundance of free electricity.
Right. It's they're
not
doing
free, but
geo-powered.
Geo-powered and hydro-powered, and so they've got an abundance of electricity. So they're doing their major expansion overseas right now.
They've got a plant in Rockdale.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, what I'm saying is that, you know, they bought Reynolds, and Reynolds was a pretty good competition for them, but I don't think they've ever had true competition, and now you've got Ford, like they make aluminum beds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so I was wondering if there's any plans, if you guys have heard of anything, because the Rockdale plant's been shut down for almost 10 years.
Right. Well, they still have an open plant in Rockdale.
One of the plants has been shut down. They shut down one of that plant, and there's a good reason. What's happened, and Jake mentioned this, the manufacturing of both aluminum and steel has progressed technologically around the world. And what the president is probably reacting to, and politically it makes sense that he's reacting to it, is some of the older inefficient plants are no longer competitive. It's just that simple. They're no longer – you can't make steel or aluminum in these plants as cheaply as you can make it in a modern plant. So they no longer are competitive.
But the original plant, this older plant, cost hundreds of millions of dollars, and you don't just write that off easily. It's against – deep inside you say, no, use it as long as you can.
How many plants do they have operating?
Who, Alcoa?
How many plants do they actually have operating in the United States?
In the United States, that's a good question.
I don't know.
We can look it up.
The reason I say that.
14 or 15, something like that.
I worked for them at one time in Rockdale.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a contract with Texas Utility, which is now Luminant. And they just bought out that contract. And that's the reason Luminant shut down two power plants. They had a contract that was supposed to be through 2030.
Right.
And Alcoa paid them. Now, this is something you hear over the airwaves. I have no idea if this is actually the number or not. $274 million that passed hands because they could get out of that contract. And Luminant took it because they needed the money. And that put about another, you know, they lost about 1,000 jobs, I would say, in 2010. And they're going to lose another 500 or 600 now that they've shut down the two power plants. And so I was wondering how many actually, I mean, I'm thinking that probably 80% of all the aluminum they get comes from other countries. I see very little Alcoa.
Yeah, I'm looking at their website right now. It looks like they've got 9 actual manufacturing plants in the United States.
And what they've done.
They used to have a lot more.
Is they have focused their operations in the newer plants, and those newer plants were built where there is an abundance of hydroelectric electricity, which is very inexpensive.
Well, not you, Washington.
Right, and in Tennessee, and in a couple of other places.
Pittsburgh.
And then outside the United States. And they basically go hunting for low-cost electricity, and that's where they build their plants. By the way, the aluminum that Alcoa makes for use in the United States is – not 100%, but there's a significant part of it that's imported into the United States. So they get hit with a 10% tariff. They're going to get hit with a 10% tariff too. And that's going to be interesting. Now, what it will do is it will boost the cost that they can charge, the price they can charge for the places that they're already profitable in the United States. But as far as putting more jobs in the United States, we were going to get to that a little later. But the bottom line to it is the tariff will actually cost us hundreds of thousands and possibly millions of jobs in the United States. And every economist agrees on that.
I'm on the borderline on that. I don't know. I know why he's trying to do it, and that is to bring those aluminum companies back here.
Right.
But I'm not sure. I do know this. One of the reasons that they shut down the two power plants was lignite.
Yeah.
And they were clean. They were clean burning. They were pretty. They were the newer plants.
But it's still more expensive than buying hydroelectric power.
Natural gas.
Yeah. And there's another piece here. We have instituted governmentally some laws about how we mine bauxite. And that's one of the major reasons why these plants have moved, because we look at the way bauxite used to be mined. It used to be mined as a strip mine, and they just basically go in and rip up the entire area and not have a whole lot of cleanup after that. So the laws came in and said, you can't do that anymore. You got to be careful about how you do it. Well, bauxite being mined in Jamaica doesn't have those laws. Bauxite being mined almost anywhere in the third world, it doesn't have those laws. So we're importing bauxite, even though bauxite's one of the most common things on the planet. It makes up about 8%, aluminum makes up about 8% of the crust, but it doesn't occur by itself. You got to refine it. You got to take the bauxite that is usually in, and it's in with clays and a lot of other things, and then you've got to fry it with electricity for a pretty long period of time. So if you've limited the ability to mine bauxite at the governmental level, and then electricity is not cheap, then it's more expensive. Even if you don't go to the retooling effort, it's more expensive to make that aluminum in the United States than it would be somewhere else. So it moves. You don't make that better. It's kind of like if your star player on your basketball team twists his ankle and you've got to pull him out and put somebody else in. You don't make your team better by making the other team pull out their star player and keep playing. That's it. Well, you say you can't do it. That's if we've got a problem, we got to fix it. We can't charge the rest of the world more for our problems. The reality of Alcoa and U.S. Steel and many of the others is they have not retooled. This is what happened to our oil industry years and years ago. We had oil. The fracking industry is going right now. We had it. We just didn't know how to get to it. It took the prices getting high enough for us to say it's profitable to do that. And it wasn't the old line companies that did it. It was new companies. And one of the problems with being on top of the heap, if you are the best in the world at something, it means now you're the one that gets knocked off. If you're talking about any new technology disrupting an existing industry, well, we were the top of the heap in aluminum and in steel. And we got hubris. We got proud of ourselves, and we didn't retool. We said we're going to be the best forever. You don't stay the best forever by handicapping everybody else. You stay the best forever by getting better at what you do. And that's
I'd like to say something.
Go ahead.
Okay. The biggest problem that Alcoa had with itself is that they started these plants in Jamaica. They started these plants in Australia, and they started these plants in South America. And so they were actually beating themselves because they were bringing in the cheap aluminum with this aluminum here. And what happened now is they've shut just about everything. I think the bauxite plant in Point Comfort is shut down also.
Yeah. I don't think
we have any bauxite coming into this country, and that's the reason. As far as the refinery, they had a refinery there, and they had one in Arkansas. And those refineries, the one in Arkansas, have been shut down for years and years.
Yeah, you got it.
They were bringing it in.
You got to look at the irony of the fact that this is the aluminum company of America that mostly isn't in America.
Yeah, it's not in America anymore, and they did it to themselves. I do know in Brazil. They went down there and built one big long pot line. And Brazil said, that looks good. Now we're going to take it over. And so I'm not sure what the percentage of ownership is with Alcor or just the whole country of Brazil, but they lost that one.
Right. Well, and we in the early 20th century, we supplied half of the world's bauxite. We still have a huge amount of bauxite that we're not mining. We either need to find better ways of getting it.
Do you know?
Where is it?
Yeah, where is it at? Where's it located? Because there's
Arkansas, Tennessee, Georgia, parts of Florida, basically all along the Appalachian Mountains.
Okay. Okay.
And
so
again,
they could dig it if they wanted to, but the laws say now you can't do it.
Well, you can do it. You just got to clean up after yourself. You can't leave a devastated hole in the ground.
Strip mining isn't allowed.
With polluted water running out of it into the watershed.
And we've got to play some commercials. I want to come back and talk about this some more after we're done. So thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate having somebody that was in the industry calling.
Thank you very much for the call. We really appreciate it.
Well, we certainly suffered in Milam County.
Yep. That is a fact. We've seen that go by. Thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. We've got some commercials to play. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. If you'd like to join in our conversation, the phone number to reach us here is 254-773-1400, and we'll be back on the other side.
Very, very.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Something, this is Jeff, there's something that I, Jake almost stole the story from me and I was halfway through it.
oh, dear.
I was going to go, but I went instead.
Yes. Well, thank you for not raspberrying me, except when you said you were going to raspberry me, which is, it's kind of like my mama said not to call you a ugly face.
Yeah.
It's the same as calling someone
so
an
I'm
ugly
So I'm not
going to
call you an ugly
yeah,
face.
Yeah, so I'm not going to call you that.
Okay. The interesting thing is, again, this is kind of back of the envelope. It takes a while to – because we don't know all the details yet. If the tariffs as announced by the president go through, it will effectively raise prices in the United States and slow production in the United States to the point where all of the benefits from the tax cut
– disappear.
Vanish because of the higher costs of the tariff.
Not just that. Let's – just categorize it the way it is. All of the benefits of the tax cut disappear because of the new tax increase. A tariff is
a tax. It is.
It's got a different name. It shouldn't. It's a tax on imports.
When the United States first was formed, we didn't have an income tax, obviously. We didn't have the United States.
Was that the 14th Amendment, something like that?
Yeah, but this was much later that we got an income tax. We started off with a government that solely made money on tariffs. And for whatever
16th Amendment.
Whatever it is worth, and I think it's worth something. Yeah, the 14th is slightly different.
Yeah, slightly different. No, forget I said the 14th.
Yeah,
so it's 16th.
The one of the keys and one of the reasons that there's a lot of people upset around the world about this concept of starting a trade war. Every major war in the world has been preceded physical war where we're shooting at each other and blowing things up and killing people, has been preceded by an increase in tariffs.
That's the reason
that was not considered to be leading to war.
Right.
We got into trade wars, and then the trade wars mushroomed into physical wars over sometimes a decade.
Just think of what we do with North Korea or Iran. We just did that to the whole world. We just said to the whole world, we're putting sanctions on you. We will not trade with you on these areas without a charge.
We haven't officially said it yet. The president announced it was going to be said.
And then in the press conference yesterday, Sarah Sanders said the president has said a lot of things this week that he didn't mean.
But then he promptly came out and said
trade wars are good and
yeah. So there's an argument going on there. This is it's easy to forget this, but the Great Depression was triggered by a tariff.
Yeah. And World War II was triggered by a tariff.
The Civil War has a couple of major causes. One of them is the tariff of 1833, which effectively placed the South
at the mercy of the North
in a position where it was economically non-competitive.
It had to produce cotton and send it to the north before it could be made into textiles to export it to the rest of the world. You couldn't just export raw cotton anymore.
Well, you could.
It would just cost a lot more.
There was a tariff on it. And so when the issue following World War II in the world, the United States has led this, is to eliminate punitive tariffs. Now, from time to time, we've tried a few. George W. Bush tried a tire tariff.
The World Trade Organization said on his steel tariff, he did a steel tariff as well. The World Trade Organization said, you can't do that. You said it's strategic. You've got plenty of steel being manufactured in the United States.
And frankly, the president said it was because of strategic reasons, but his press secretary then said, jobs.
Yeah, and we're about out of time. If you would like to call us off the air, we have voicemail waiting during the weekend at
254-947-1111
or 1-800-914-7526. You can email us directly at jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts, read our newsletter, read our philosophy. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.